Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. As promised, Scott Wieman here with us. He just brought in, set it down next to me here, the Catholic in Recovery Workbook, A Guide to the 12 Steps. This is one that, your recovery involves, whatever it might be that you are in recovery from, this is a wonderful, wonderful book. It's part of the whole Catholic in Recovery organization, doing wonderful work. There's meetings in parishes, there's meetings online, and now the workbook. Scott's got his book, which is The Sacraments and the 12 Steps. Yes?
Yep.
I finally got the
12
title.
Steps and the Sacraments.
The 12 Steps and the Sacraments. Close. But I was reading from the bottom up. But And if none of that is enough for you, well, you can just call Scott right here, 888-318-7884, talking about addiction and recovery, the Catholic perspective, and also the many riches that the Catholic Church gives for those who are in recovery. And sometimes we talk about the riches that the Catholic Church could give. Like, there's still plenty of opportunity for us to grow as a church, isn't there, in developing, in sharing the riches of the church for those in recovery.
Yeah, I think leaning into the healing nature of the healing ministry of Jesus, and enlivening and giving life to the sacraments and fellowship and the amazing healing that the body of Christ can provide to the body of Christ, particularly as it relates to addiction.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot that priests, incredible leaders, and really move forward the mission as church. And it's also, there are plenty of people in communities who have found recovery from a variety of addictions and are grateful and are excited to share it with others who are seeking recovery.
Right.
And just like in our faith, when we share our faith with others, it grows within us. When we share our recovery with others who are seeking what we have, our recovery grows inside of us. It's not too complicated. It's simple, but not easy, though.
By the way, 888-318-7884, the number. We love it when you call. Maybe there's a family member, a family situation, maybe your own recovery you want to talk about. Maybe recovery is something that you're aspiring to or considering. Whatever the situation, if you'd like to talk about healing from addiction and recovery, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. You know, one phrase I don't think that I have talked with you about in the many conversations that we've had is Pope Francis's wanting the church to go out to the margins and be with those in the margins. Mm-hmm. And there's a way in which addiction is marginalizing. Like when you're talking about being trapped in addiction, you're talking about being marginalized from the rest of society. Really, it's very isolating.
Absolutely. And in my experience, and I'm here as a recovering alcoholic and addict of nearly all sorts, when I was active in my addiction, it felt like I was just outside of this really big circle that everyone else was in. Like there was this, almost this memo that I just didn't get.
Yeah.
And I know that others feel that way too, who are active in addiction or are struggling with this attachment to something not of God. It might be an attachment to food, alcohol, drugs, technology, gambling, lust, all different symptoms of the same spiritual malady as I see it. And when we are attached to those things, then there's no room for the mission of Jesus to be active within us.
Right, right. And so the idea of the church, and this is one thing that your organization has done, but this is also, I mean, in different times and places, the church has been good at this and less good at it. But opening up the parish to meetings and that kind of things, that is a way of going out to the peripheries, going out to the margins.
Absolutely. And You mentioned, you know, the people who are active in addictions feeling marginalized, like kind of on the boundaries of society in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I think the way in the church that we've provided a solution to addiction has been kind of in that same vein. We've kind of pushed the solution to the peripheries of the church.
That's very well said. Yeah.
So rather, you know, than, you know, we show up at the parish being like really the central field of ministry or of spiritual connection. There's not a lot, you know, for a long time we come to the church to do the good, the Bible studies or the, you know, video programs and things like that, and provide swimming lessons, let's say. A lot of people, but too oftentimes we're giving swimming lessons to people who are drowning. And so there's a lot more room for life support, activities that are involved like spiritual life support. But for when I say that we push those to the peripheries of the church, I mean, you know, oftentimes we'll make a referral to, you know, we'll go to Catholic Charities. They'll help you out.
Yeah.
They're doing wonderful things at Catholic Charities throughout the country and around the world. But we've kind of pushed them out, like if you've got a problem, don't bring it here to the parish. Kind of, you know, make sure that you at least, like, look good, reasonably good.
I know, clean up, and then you can come over here.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which, that does not sound like Jesus at all. No. I mean, there is a need for, you know, you need spaces where families can be safe and have a wholesome environment. Mm-hmm. You need the worship space to be beautiful and inviting and all that. But that's not all we do. And there are plenty of opportunities, you know, Thursday night, open the hall and have a meeting.
Exactly. And sometimes, I mean, there's varying degrees of welcomeness to the idea of a recovery fellowship in a parish.
Right.
Oftentimes, and most pastors and Catholic leaders around the country, I think once they hear of Catholic in Recovery or other Catholic recovery resources, they're eager to welcome it, and they know the need. They know the spiritual needs of their sheep.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, you know, they hear it in the confessional. Having a place to refer people to where they can get connected with other people who have a solution is something that most leaders and Catholic priests and, you know, are eager to have.
Yeah.
Some will still take on an attitude, which really, I think, furthers this idea of, you know, healing has to happen on the margins of, I've heard before a priest say, well, Scott, why would I want a bunch of addicts and alcoholics showing up at my church?
Really?
And, you know, something along that vein. And, you know, I kind of just like scratch my head and, you know, look at them and you know that they already are. They already are showing up.
That's a great answer. That's a better answer than I would have given. That's a, yeah, like, who do you think's coming to church here?
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. Right. A lot of people white knuckling it through Mass, Father. Mm-hmm. And maybe sure. You'd like them to be fully present.
Exactly.
Because they know that they're welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah. 888-318-7884, the number, 888-318-7884. Yeah, that's right. When we push the problems to the margins, then what we create is a fake community instead of real, because everyone's hiding their problems.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's, because I can't be here if I'm an addict. Mm-hmm. I can't be here if I'm, you know, I mean, I've known people who just, there's nothing wrong with them except they just got out of prison and they don't feel like, oh, I just got out of prison. I don't belong. Well, why would we want a church where a guy that just got out of prison doesn't feel like he can come to church?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's all over the church. I'm kind of not really as much of a young adult anymore, but I was very active in young adult ministry
You're
for
not a
while.
Adults. Knock it off. You're not a young adult at all.
I once was, long ago.
Yeah,
and in connecting with young adults in particular, who we all struggle with. Lust addiction. Let's just take lust addiction, for example.
Sure.
Across the board, the number of people who struggle with lust-related addictions, pornography, masturbation, other sexual compulsions is rampant.
Sure.
It's rampant. And priests know this because they hear it in the confessional. And we, you know, so many people, though, in this young adult age or regardless of age, you know, if they're active in lust addiction or viewing pornography or they don't have it all together. They feel almost as if they're not allowed in the church, or there's like this great deal of shame. Shame creates a cloud over everything that really prevents us from seeking the solution and just furthers us into the margins. Shame keeps us in the margins. And so we need to really, as a church, cut through that, be aware of that, and speak about this stuff. Speak about the common challenges that individuals and families are experiencing. Not, you know, recognizing just because we talk about it doesn't mean it's, it's not getting us stuck. It's actually talking about it and accepting our powerlessness over addiction, which is the first step of recovery, is really a movement towards the solution. The movement that an individual makes to find recovery from an addiction is very similar to the movement in which the institution of the church ought to be making, recognizing that there's a problem, and then providing resources and not being afraid to speak about it, but giving a space for individuals to find healing.
Catholic in Recovery, you can find them at catholicinrecovery.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can get the Catholic in Recovery workbook there.
Yep.
And find all kinds of other resources. There's already callers. I'd like to go to a call.
Sure.
That's right. Let's go to Anonymous in South Carolina. Anonymous, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Scott Wieman.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I felt like this is the perfect opportunity to call. Just had a long discussion with a family member about my current situation. I've been a methamphetamine addict for a little over 5 years now. And I don't necessarily feel the shame in the church. I know that may be different from parish to parish, but my thing is, I feel like I'm doing most of the things right throughout this process, going to church regularly, receiving the sacraments, praying rosary fairly often, trying to stay on that currently, and I have been clean for a little bit of time now, but it seems like I called in last week, and as a matter of fact, excuse me, yeah, I seem to, this addiction is very cunning. It just sneaks up on me at time to time after various lengths of clean time, and I was just wondering if I'm missing anything or if I could get some advice. I do need to start going to Eucharistic adoration more. I have kind of been slow on that. But I was just curious to hear your thoughts. I know it's kind of a long-winded, kind of out there question, but if you wouldn't mind, I'd appreciate your answer. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you, Anonymous. And certainly there's others who have – I wonder, are you still on the phone? Because I've got a question.
Yes.
Great. So it sounds like you're active in your church, and it sounds like the addiction, cunning, baffling, and powerful. You mentioned that. When you go out or relapse, you're not deciding to spoil all the good things in your life. You're not making that active choice of, I think I'm going to ruin my life tonight by re-engaging in this addiction. I'm sure that that's not how it plays out in your mind, but rather it's just a response to something that comes up. And it sounds like you have a very active life in the church. You say, you could be doing more, but active in your community. And I wonder, what have you tried as far as recovery fellowships, or what have you done to seek recovery or connect with others who are in recovery?
Yes. So very recently I started attending the Narcotics Anonymous meetings, usually at up to four times a week now for the last 3 weeks. Been doing that, and I've been in VA treatment program. I just completed a month-long session of there every day, Monday through Friday, half days. Feeling much better now. I do feel different than previous times, more committed. But right now, those are the two main things: the NA and the VA.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a great pursuit. I would, I think that if you pursue your recovery with half the zeal in which you pursued your addictive behaviors, that God will have you in the right spot. You're in the right place right now, balancing recovery and participating in regular meetings where you can connect with other people who have been in your shoes and who can show you the way. It's like individuals who are just reaching into the well to lift you up. You're going to have an opportunity to reach back into that well and lift others up as well. So I would strongly encourage that within those meetings that you're participating in, find a sponsor. The way that this works is find someone in the group who has what you want, who's living a lifestyle that is appealing to you. And it doesn't have to be complicated, but just ask them to, can you show me what you've done? And connect, ask mm-hmm. them for coffee, or if you have time after a meeting, can I connect? Can I exchange phone numbers? Uh-huh. And just explore what that working relationship with a sponsor might look like. And they'll walk you through the 12 steps in a way that they've been brought through the steps, and you can integrate your Catholic faith. Perhaps they're Catholic, perhaps they're not, but you would want someone as a sponsor to be supportive of your faith. They don't necessarily have to share the same faith. As long as they can share recovery experience and bring you through the steps, if they're actively working a program of recovery, cling to them. And I think that in addition to all that you're doing in the church, God's going to have you right where you're supposed to be.
Thank you. And it's funny you mentioned that, because that's the next on the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely planning on getting a sponsor.
So, yeah, the way that it was told you. And maybe we find a sponsor. The man who helped save my life, he kind of found me, darted across the room after this, this first attempt back at recovery, and didn't give me any time, any wiggle room, but basically just darted across the room after the meeting, looked me in the eye and said, I know exactly how you feel. You don't ever have to drink again. And that was different from the way that concerned loved ones, family members, and friends were speaking to me. He was speaking from this authority, this experience that he had, which cut through all of this denial and shame that I had. And suddenly I had this little bit of hope, and hope is a great anecdote for, solution for shame that is very common amongst us who struggle with a variety of addictions.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. And you know what, too, also, sorry, Kasai.
No, go ahead.
I would say, you know, you're going to participating in recovery meetings. You might find some people who are have a personal bias against the church. You might share some anti-Catholic sentiment. Mm-hmm. Do not let that keep you from continuing to attend those meetings. You know, those are people who are hurt people. And I think that you can provide a hope and a presence, a Catholic presence within those secular meetings that also provides hope that perhaps others are looking for.
Absolutely. Completely agree with that. I could not agree more. Mm.
Anonymous, I want to just say thank you before we let you go, because we do have to go to a break. But God bless you. I know that many of our listeners are praying for you right now. But your sharing has been a great deal to us. I hope we'll get to talk again. Please do call again, but I got to go to the break, all right?
Thanks, Scott.
All right, God bless you.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Save the date. Saturday, August 26th is the day, and Birmingham, Alabama is the place for the 2023 EWTN Family Celebration. We're celebrating Mother Angelica's love for the Eucharist, and join us to mark the centennial year of Mother's birth. Make your plans now to attend this free event. More details coming soon at our Family Celebration webpage, ewtn.com/family celebration.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Just want to mention four fine freshmen. I assume they're fine freshmen at Catholic University stopping by the studio while they are on spring break. Welcome to San Diego, Catholic University students, and thanks for coming by. Scott Wieman is our guest this hour. 888-318-7884 is the number. We're talking about addiction and recovery, and if you got a question in that regard, whatever the question is, you are welcome here. And by the way, you don't have to be Catholic. You don't have to be Christian. If you got an addiction and recovery question, we'd love to get you an answer. And Scott's a good man to do it. 888-318-7884. We're going to Paula now in Huntingburg. Huntingburg, really? Listening on 93.1 FM. I never heard of Huntingburg before. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did.
Oh, all right. Huntingburg, where everyone's got a gun.
I guess. I just took a drink, and I thought to myself before I took the drink, I thought, I hope I don't choke so that I can talk to them. And what do? I choked.
Oh, well, you're doing fine. You're doing fine. You put up with my dumb jokes, so I think you're doing all right.
All right. Well, let me get this. I've got a cough drop in my mouth. Maybe it'll help the situation. I was just commenting to your screener that I listened to, well, let me tell you one life experience that I had. It's a real quick one. When I had a business, I had a technician that he was from Pennsylvania. I said, well, and my business was in Kentucky. And so I said, how did you make it from Pennsylvania to Kentucky? He said, well, he said, I was an alcoholic, and I had to get away from the element, all my friends, and my wife was always having migraines. So he said, we moved to Kentucky. I didn't take another drink, and she only had one migraine when we got here, and that was it. Hmm. It was gone. They just had to leave, you know.
Well, it's the healing power of Kentucky.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah.
Paul, do you have a question for Scott?
Oh, I have the question that I have has to do with where I worked in Florida for a Christian nonprofit where we had hope to addicts and alcoholics. And and we had a man's house and a woman's house. We put them through the program, got them on their feet, got them out so they had a job and a way to make it through life. So all that being said, I worked in the thrift store that helped to finance the whole program. And so the every time, I mean, it never failed. Every one of them that came from the house, the very first thing they would say to tell me was their hard luck, their bad luck, their, you know, their bad situation. And so I guess my question would be, do you find that they get over that a lot? Do they, because like I was saying to your call screener, I finally came up with this thing, and I asked her, I said, okay, tell me yes or no. Can you see your back? Yes or no? She said, no. I said, no, I can't see my back either. So let's don't look back, you know?
Well, is this a
you know
common
thing?
Let me ask, Scott, Paula. So the focusing on the negative, mm-hmm. is this a part of addiction?
Yeah, I think this is certainly a very common experience for anyone who's seeking recovery from alcoholism or a drug addiction, food-related addictions, lust, any type of addiction or compulsion, is this great tendency to look back in the past with great shame,
okay,
or look ahead to the future with great fear. Hence, we hear all the time, this is a one-day-at-a-time program, which means that we just focus on our efforts, what we can do today, what can I control today, what can I do within this 24 hours that I have today in order to be the best version of myself or to you know, surrender myself to God and His will. And so looking, you know, a lifetime of recovery seems daunting and something that I can't even commit to, but I can commit to today. I can commit to being free and sober today. Now, I, you know, again, this was my experience too. The shame of the past was haunting me from keeping, from doing anything in the future, making any progress towards a positive future. And it just, you know, oftentimes in order to relieve ourselves from the shame of the past, we, alcohol, drugs, food, lust, these addictive or compulsive behaviors are oftentimes the solution to our problem, but they're also the problem. Our problem is caused by this source, whether it's a behavioral addiction or a substance-related addiction. We seek this, and that has great consequences. It creates shame. It creates relational challenges. And so in order to deal with the shame or the reality of our situation, which if we were to look at ourselves, our lives honestly in our situation, we would be overwhelmed with this, just overwhelmed with fear and how am I supposed to do this? And so we reach for the drug of choice. Maybe it's a substance, maybe it's a behavior in order to find freedom from that obsessive thinking and this shame. And that just creates this cycle of addiction where the problem and the solution are hard to discern the difference between the two.
Isn't that something? Yeah.
Now, however, I would say, though, there is a healthy looking back, though. When we're working through the 12 steps, we're looking at patterns within our life. We're looking at resentments that we've been holding for a long time. And if we don't put that on paper, if we don't do the work to find freedom from those resentments or the fear which we may have been holding on to for such a long time, those things, fear, resentment, dishonesty, are really at the heart, kind of below the surface of the addiction. We need to get to the root of the problem, and that's a good, big part of it. The addiction, whether it's manifested through alcohol, drugs, food, lust, is really just a consequence of that inner discomfort. So we seek addiction as a means to cope. That addiction has it really gets its claws in us, and then the problem and the solution are basically the same thing.
Paula, thank you very, very much for the call. I do appreciate it. The number here is 888-318-7884. Scott Wieman is our guest, Catholic in Recovery. If you listen to us for very long, you know that Scott is here from time to time, and we've had the great privilege of kind of knowing Scott while Catholic in Recovery has gotten really kind of, I don't know if the word successful is the word, but has found more and more ways of helping people in parishes online. I mean, during the pandemic, you started doing the online stuff like everybody else did, and that's just grown by leaps and bounds.
Yeah, virtual meetings. You can find a virtual Catholic in Recovery meeting several a week, probably about 30 different meetings a week, 5 or 6 different meetings happening every day, and a place where you can, yeah, get active in your recovery. When the pandemic hit, we moved to virtual meetings right away, which provided a place for people who are struggling, seeking addiction recovery to find their daily medicine, really, on a regular basis. A lot of in-person meetings had been shut down, and so people were able to find Catholic in Recovery meetings. And also people who otherwise didn't live near a Catholic in Recovery local in-person group can participate. We've got people from all continents that join and participate. It's awesome to get the experience, the shared experience from people from different, you know, regions and cultural differences. It's really wonderful. We should also note, I got to say, we've got a few retreats upcoming. We've got a retreat up in at the Mackenzie Bridge in at the St. Benedict's Lodge in Mackenzie Bridge, Oregon, March 24th through 26th. And then also a retreat at the Shrine of the Most Blessed Sacrament in Hanceville, Alabama. Great place to meet others who are seeking recovery from addiction.
Yeah, both sides of the Mississippi. You're getting recovery. We're going to start just, these will be regular things?
Yeah, we've had a few in the past. We'll have a few more.
Very good. Check it all out at CatholicInRecovery.com. We've got a bunch of folks on the line. I'm going to let everybody that's on get to Scott. Don't worry. We'll be right back with more of Scott Wieman on Addiction and Recovery on Catholic Answers Live.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity in The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
As Catholic apologetics have gotten stronger, Protestant responses have gotten stronger as well, and now they have their own answers to rebut the standard Catholic proofs. Don't fret, we've got you covered. In his new book, Meeting the Protestant Response, apologist Carlo Broussard gives well-reasoned biblical answers to Protestant comebacks. Order your copy of Meeting the Protestant Response today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
What if the voice of your deepest doubts about Catholicism rose up in the form of a human being and challenged you to defend your most foundational beliefs? That's the task apologist Trent Horn took upon himself in his new book, Devil's Advocate, a dialogue with his own best objections against the faith that he professes and defends. You can stand up against your doubts, and Trent will show you how. Pick up your copy of Devil's Advocate today at shop.catholic.com or at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Catholic in Recovery, a program started by Scott Wieman. It has grown and grown. You got lots of people involved in it now. I mean, you, and I know you got some. What was the group that helped you with the seed money? Remember that?
Sorry, your mic was off. Yeah, the OSV Institute for Catholic Innovation. We were 2021. Awarded a top prize in the Catholic the OSV Challenge.
Yeah, I always want to give them credit.
Still active? Yeah, me too. Our Sunday visitor, wonderful things.
And now in parishes, online, you've got the workbook. This is very helpful stuff. If you're in the recovery process yourself and you want to work through the workbook, the Catholic in Recovery workbook available at CatholicInRecovery.com. I just want to go back to the phones because there's a million people waiting to talk. Bella in Houston, Texas, listening on 1430 AM. Bella, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Scott Wieman.
Hello. Yes, I was dating someone, and we were going to get married, and it took me a little bit of some time to realize, because, I had never dealt with somebody that was addicted to drugs, so it took me a while to kind of pick up on the behavior and, you know, just the pattern. So anyway, my point is that, my question is, how do you know whether or not you're being fair with the person, because they have such different sides and facets of that, of being an addict, that you kind of see the good side first, and then there comes the dark side. And then, so anyway, after about 2 years of dealing with that, because I didn't want to leave because I cared for this person, but I finally decided, no, this is not positive, because, you know, it can get you in a lot of trouble on this end. And I decided to let the relationship go, because he'd go on a binge, and then, you know, I wouldn't hear from him for like 3-4 weeks, and then he'd call me back, and then it'd be that nice, you know, kind person. So that was a person that I liked, that side, and then it would happen all over again. And actually recently, he called me like 2 days ago. Well, I didn't return the phone call or anything like that, but I was just wondering, you know, I don't want to be judgmental, and I'm on my own spiritual journey, and I was just wondering, how do you know that the Lord, how do you discern that, hey, that person is, it's not about them or you, it's just that it's not going to work out, you know? So that's
okay,
my question.
Bella.
Yeah. So what boundaries should I put up with an individual in my life who is struggling with an addiction?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's going to be shaped by the nature of the relationship. If it's a mother child, a parent and a parent child relationship is going to be different than a dating relationship, which is going to be different than a spousal relationship. I'm not going to speak in any absolutes here. There's a lot of nuance to the response to this question. And it's really, you've got to do what's best for you and the spiritual well-being of yourself. And that might look like putting up some pretty clear boundaries in the relationship, which might look like, and it's going to be different from each person, but I'm not going to engage in a conversation or a discussion with you if you are under the influence of something, or that might be different. Also, if they're in recovery versus not in recovery or seeking recovery, I'll say this.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best things that anyone has ever done for me is break up with me. My recovery in many ways was kind of put in motion. I was dating a woman who was a wonderful woman, still is a wonderful woman. Haven't spoken to her for a long time. But we moved, started dating. I was 21 years old, had just 8 months previously, was out of treatment from alcohol and drugs, stayed sober for about 8 months or so, really just white-knuckling it, though. I thought I was too young to be an addict. And we started dating, and I started using again, and that relationship had a bunch of problems. I would lie and deceive and manipulate in order to avoid consequences. This might sound familiar to you or other listeners.
Yes.
And we moved from Wisconsin to San Diego, which kind of like moving from Pennsylvania to Kentucky. But, what happened there was actually that's kind of like switching seats in the Titanic, the geographic change.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Titanic still went down. And, so we did all these things. But it wasn't until I had realized the natural consequences of my behavior, which an addict who puts the pursuit of a substance or a behavior above all else, despite what we say, the actions would prove otherwise, that this was the most important relationship in my life at the time was my relationship with alcohol and drugs. And until that relationship was over with, I had no capacity to be in a relationship with anyone else. And I wouldn't have started or sought recovery if it wasn't for this person intervening and saying, Scott, you should look me in the eye. I remember very well. Scott, you're absolutely hopeless. You're never going to change. She was doing for her what she had to.
And the thing is, I'm sorry to interject, but I wanted to just get this in real quick. Mm-hmm. The thing is that it almost seemed like a child, like the more you let the behavior go, the worse it was getting each time, and the lying and the deceit. And I was like, hey, wait a minute, you know, how much of an opportunity or chance do you give this person to change or to recover or to draw it back? But it was out of my hands. My second question is, part of the question is, is it okay after a period of time, let's say like a year? I don't want any romantic relationship, but is it fair to say, okay, I want to be, we can have a friendship? Because the thing is that the people, it was like you're saying, the women that he was with before, he could just get on the horn and say, hey, because they had so much in common with those vices. It was like, to me, it was just so disrespectful. And I was like, no way. I have boundaries. This is the way I want to live my life. This is the kind of partner I want to be with. And hey, it might be difficult for you, but it's not for me. I'm going to say no.
Yep. Okay. So there's a lot. I imagine that there's a lot of people who are listening to who have the question of how can I support or help my loved one who's struggling with an addiction? One of the most common questions we get, and it's a very reasonable question. And, the recovery is not just for the individual who is impacted, who has the addiction, but it's for everyone who is affected by addiction. That means family members, that means friends or loved ones or significant others. Seek help. When you are sick and tired, when the addict is sick and tired of being sick and tired, they're going to try something different. But until then, they're just going to keep in the same addiction cycle that they're active in. When the family member or loved one is sick and tired of being sick and tired, then they're going to do something different as well. You can choose to allow addiction to be present in your life or not. You have that choice. It's a matter of going about it, you know, having honest conversations, giving specific feedback about how another person's behavior has impacted you. That can be very helpful. However, you cannot, you didn't cause the addiction, you can't control it, and you cannot cure it. Just as a friend or a family member, be very aware of those three things.
Bella, God bless you, and thank you so much for the call. Still lots of folks on with questions for Scott, so on we go to Tampa, Florida. Jack in Tampa, Florida, listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Go ahead, Jack, with your question.
Hi there. I had a question regarding food addiction. You brought that up a few times during the hour, and I was just thinking, you know, when it comes to drinking, I mean, somebody could just stop drinking. Or smoking, somebody could just stop smoking cigarettes. But how does one really tackle food addiction? You can't just give up food, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And that is something, so in I formed and began Catholic in Recovery 2015, 2016-ish or so. And this has been a big part of my life since then. Probably the biggest revelation that I've realized has been that there are just as many people affected by food-related addictions as there are people impacted by substance abuse addictions, alcohol and drugs. It's not something that when we think of addiction, we often don't think of food addiction as a challenge, but it is very, very common that people struggle with food-related addictions, either compulsive overeating. In other cases, it can be restricted eating. But a lot of the same tendencies between the compulsive eater and the person struggling with alcoholism or drug addiction. There is a woman who started a Catholic in Recovery group in Portland, Oregon, who taught me a lot about this. She active in a recovering overeater fellowship for quite some time, and she said exactly what you just mentioned. She said, Scott, you know, we use the term sobriety to define someone who's found freedom from alcohol. And we'd use the term abstinence to describe someone who's found freedom from food addiction. Whereas she, you know, says, Scott, that's backwards. You as a recovering alcoholic are actually abstinent. You don't engage at all. You just don't touch the stuff. As a compulsive overeater, I need to take the tiger out of its cage three times a day. And I need to do that with sober ambition and a sober spirit. And so you're absolutely right that this is, you know, food-related addictions, very, very common. Also, needs to be handled with the same tenacity that an alcohol or drug addiction needs to be dealt with. Find other people who have found the solution. In a lot of cases, you know, sugar and flour are kind of the key activators here. When someone who is struggling with a food-related addiction has either sugar or flour, that creates a craving and a mental obsession inside of them that is very similar to the way that an alcoholic having a drink of alcohol is almost, there's this obsession that's activated once we engage. And so there are some similarities, there are some nuanced differences, but still, you need to approach it. You can have the 12 steps. There are plenty of 12-step groups related to food-related addictions. We've got Catholic and Recovery meetings specific for food-related addictions. There is some nuanced differences, but still, the 12 steps is a common solution that can provide freedom and a spiritual awakening.
Jack, that takes us right to the break, Jack, but check out CatholicInRecovery.com for more information. And again, I do really appreciate the call. We'll take this break. We'll be right back with more Scott Wieman on addiction and recovery from a Catholic perspective on Catholic Answers Live.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you ready to spread your wings? Wings is the weekly newsletter that's packed with exclusive news, program information, features, and updates of all that's going on at the Global Catholic Network. To sign up, go to EWTN.com, click subscribe, enter your name and email address, and you'll start getting your wings every week. Get your wings today. It's the weekly newsletter from EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Scott Wieman has become a regular here at Catholic Answers because we just value so much what he does and who he is. And Catholic in Recovery is something that you should check out. And I feel like this, and I don't know if I'm the only person, but you can send me an email at radio@catholic.com if you agree or if you have any suggestions. I feel like we need Scott to be in media more. I think we need him doing a podcast or something on recovery. And maybe we'll get you there, Scott, at some point. But
stay tuned.
I'd love to hear what people think about that. Just send us an email, radio@catholic.com. Because we do what's essentially a question and answer apostolate here at Catholic Answers. And it's usually on doctrines and that kind of thing. But what you do, I think, is so needed, that to the sharing, the overcoming of shame, the stories that are involved and can give people hope. So I'd like to see that in Catholic media. I really would.
Addiction is very isolating, and it wants us to believe that we're the only ones that are struggling with this problem.
Yeah.
And so we keep it, you know, we keep our secrecy, we stay in denial, we don't let anyone know because we feel like we're terminally unique.
Yeah.
Like the solution doesn't apply to us. Or
So
it's important for storytelling and hearing the stories of people who have found freedom. Yeah. From a variety of addictions.
In studio with us is Isaac from Pennsylvania, but he's a student at Catholic University. They are on spring break, and as so many spring breakers do, he came to Catholic Answers. Hello, Isaac.
Hi.
How do you like Catholic University?
Oh, it's awesome.
It is, really? Mm-hmm. We hear such good things about that it's a really quite sturdy Catholic university.
Oh, I agree.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Very good. I'm glad to hear it. You got a question for Scott?
Yeah. So I was kind of thinking about addiction, you know, as is the topic, and I was wondering, is all addiction sinful, and is there something that is kind of, is there something unique to addiction itself that makes it sinful?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. So addiction, we can get addicted to good things and bad things, kind of, you know, an addiction to alcohol or addiction to pornography or cocaine, methamphetamines, we can agree that those are not good things. An addiction to working out, an addiction to attending church, an addiction to an addiction to Catholic Answers Live. These things are all probably
these are
good things.
Yeah.
But if they are prioritized above other good and important things in our lives, then they can provide a barrier to spiritual growth. And really, by definition, if we were to look at a clinical definition of addiction, there are a few components that really qualify us for addiction. That means that there are an increase in tolerance. So it requires more or more extreme doses in order to achieve the same level of satisfaction or effect. And second, it has to have consequences. There have to be some kind of consequences in our life that's experienced, professional consequences, personal consequences, and such. And so if you are addicted to Catholic Answers Live and not showing up for dinner with your family, then that might be an addiction, and that might be, I don't know. So it's not my job, I would say, to deem what is sinful and what is not sinful. I think that we have some pretty good parameters around that. But if we're putting something in the place of God as an idol, then that might be a bit sinful. If we're seeking something that could be in placement of God. So great question, Isaac. Wonderful question.
You satisfied with that answer?
I think so. If we're acknowledging that there is a addiction, let's say like working out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then, and you limit yourself and say, well, I'm not, you know, I just want to kind of stay active.
Mm-hmm.
Then wouldn't it still be better to just not have the addiction in the first place? Or is it that by kind of controlling it, then it's no longer an addiction if it's a good thing?
Yeah, if you can moderate it, then it probably is not an addiction. Is that kind of what you had in mind, like working out? Is there something that you were thinking of?
Yeah, I guess that was pretty much it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that if there aren't consequences, and then it may not be. I wouldn't categorize it as an addiction. It's probably just a lifestyle, in a lot of ways. However, you know, some people get sober and then they spend all of their time in recovery meetings, which is, you know, they have a great beneficial presence in those meetings. Their spiritual life is awoken by the newcomer coming in and them being able to find meaning and purpose in their life. But if we don't just get sober just to stay in meetings, though. We get sober so that we can live a purposeful and meaningful life outside of our lives, and so that we can be active in our communities and in our job and in our personal relationships. So, you know, even things like recovery meetings, you know, can kind of take the place of other healthy things in our lives. And so, whereas I might not categorize that as an addiction, I would say that we want to be temperate. The cardinal virtue of temperance can be a very helpful guide as far as, seeking whether this is a good thing or a bad thing.
Isaac, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Really enjoyed you coming in. It was very nice to see you all, such fine young men from Catholic University. And doing the whoop whoop out there. Thank you. Arsenio was off the air before you guys were born. You can't do that whoop whoop thing. The number is 888-318-7884. I'm going to go to Teresa in Washington. I want to tell you, though, I'm happy you put us in the, like, going to church and working out category, not in the cocaine and heroin category. Oh, yeah. I appreciate that. Teresa in Washington, D.C., listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. We're glad you're here. Teresa, go ahead with your question first. Well, do I have Teresa? Teresa, are you there? Uh-oh. I don't have Teresa. Okay, we got it. We had a little phone mix-up, and I apologize for that. But we will. If Teresa wants to call back, we'll get her on there. 888-318-7884. Allison wasn't able to stay on the line, but she asked this. I'm noticing a lot of similarities between the STEP program and Ignatian spirituality. Are you aware of any Ignatian programs or retreats that incorporate the STEP program?
This is a great awareness, Allison. There are plenty of great Ignatian spirituality programs. In fact, there's a organization called the Ignatian Spirituality Project that provides weekend retreats that integrate 12-step wisdom with the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius. This is exactly what in 1939, or the late 1930s, early 1940s, Father Ed Dowling was a Jesuit priest from St. Louis and knocked on the apartment door of AA's founder, Bill Wilson, saying exactly this, saying, I see your 12 steps, and I find a lot of similarities between them and the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius. And he then became a mentor and kind of a sponsor to Bill W., one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, and provided a lot of really wonderful Catholic influence in the early formation of Alcoholics Anonymous and other 12-step groups.
Thank you very much for that question. I'm going to go now to Robert in Des Moines, Iowa, listening on 94.5 FM, Iowa Catholic Radio. Robert, go ahead with your question for Scott Wieman.
Yes, good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Hi, Scott, it's interesting listening to you. Hmm. And Cy, I got the book that I called a couple months ago when Jimmy was on.
I remember.
And I'm the guy that was been on methadone for like 30 years. I'm 68. I'll be 68 next month. And I've been on since I was 38 after about 20 years of opioid use. And what I was wondering about, this methadone is just such a long-lasting half-life. I mean, the last time I got off, I truly was not sleeping and not feeling good for a year.
Yeah.
It just had no energy and just, all my pains and aches were coming back. And I don't even feel the doses that I take daily. I truly don't. And I was just wondering, and I'm 68, maybe I got, who knows, well, my father lived the 90s, so did my mother, but I haven't lived the clean life they did. But is it worth getting off? I mean, I don't even feel it. No one knows I'm on it.
Okay.
It's not like you're walking around drunk. It's because you stay on it. And
Scott?
Mm-hmm. This is... Yeah, great question. So methadone being a health a replacement for people who are getting off of opioids, very, very addictive, has not only a spiritual and a cognitive and an emotional grip on us, but also a physical grip on us, and particularly opioid addiction has this really great physical, you know, our bodies need it. It almost becomes dependent upon it. And so methadone, other Suboxone is another drug that can be used to help get people off of the hard drugs of opioids, whether they're prescribed or non-prescribed. And also, as Robert's describing, then people can kind of stay on that for a long time. You know, a lot of times when a doctor is prescribing, and this is really, you know, there are various ways to look at the world. One is through a spiritual lens, another is through a physical lens, and a doctor is typically going to be looking at the world and your what's best for you from a biological standpoint. And so this does allow, you know, some things like methadone or Suboxone do, it does allow your body to not have all of the bad effects of a hard drug like an opioid, but still not also have the withdrawal symptoms that can be devastating and even life-threatening. And so I would not make any changes to a methadone program without consulting a doctor. I am not authorized to be making any recommendations of someone getting off of that. But I think that if you do have an ambition to get off of it and live freely, share that with your doctor and explain the why behind it. Explain, you know, the physical reasons for it, but also the spiritual and the way that you view the world. And I think that you can work together with a doctor. If you do feel like this is you feel called, like you've brought this to prayer, you've had conversations with people that you trust about this, and they think that it's best for you. There's a lot of nuanced conversations that probably need to take place. But if you've got an authorization from trusted peers, mentors, and a doctor, then I think that it certainly can be done.
Robert, all right.
And I know one thing is certainly not the best way to live a life. It's not the, you know, it is, it takes, I was a wonderful salesman before I started. And once I got on methadone, I just went from making all sorts of money to having a hard time making $200 a week. And this is back in the 80s, of course, early 80s.
Mm-hmm. Well, Scott had something.
Yeah, I would encourage you to limit the judgment, limit judgments of yourself. You know, it is what it is. And
there's not a moral imperative on him right now. Right. Yeah, exactly. It's a medical thing. And as Scott said, he's not going to give you medical advice on that. But I do feel like sometimes, if Robert's problem is, I just don't know morally if I'm doing the wrong thing, that should not be the primary concern here.
No.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. Thanks, Robert.
But as he described, there are benefits to getting off of methadone.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Josie in Southern... Robert, call again, too. I always enjoy when you call. Josie in Southern Michigan, listening on Ascension Radio. Go ahead with your question for Scott Wieman.
I'd like to know, Scott, how the Catholic Church refers to Sister Ignacia Gavin as co-founder of AA. I was listening to American Catholic History on Alexa and found that, my golly, this sister is instrumental in starting the knowledge that AA people are physically sick as well as can be mentally sick.
Josie, I got to let Scott answer because we're right up. I didn't realize we're right on the break here.
Yeah. So I mentioned Father Ed Dowling had an impact in forming AA and 12-step programs in its early formation, as did Sister Ignacia, who was active in a hospital in Northeast Ohio where kind of AA got started. Really, it started when one alcoholic shared the good news with another. And in turn, that kept both of them sober, and they looked for the third person. And yeah, Sister Ignacia was active in the hospital in which they were active and working. And I hear of her more often in recovery circles than I do in the church. I think there's a lot of opportunity for us in the church to recognize the profound social impact that Sister Ignacia had in providing a route to healing that maintains Catholic spirituality.
Well, thanks for bringing her up, Josie. Thanks very much. Thanks to everybody who called. Thanks to our guest, Scott Wieman. We really enjoy it when you come here, Scott.
Thank you, Si.
That clear. The Catholic in Recovery workbook is available now at catholicinrecovery.com. It's a guide to the 12 steps.
Also available at Catholic in Recovery, all kinds of resources on the Catholic faith and recovery, even resources where you can start a group. Yeah. All right. Send me an email, radio@catholic.com, if you want to talk about Scott Wieman possibly doing a podcast or something. Maybe you got a good idea. Scott, thanks again. We'll see you tomorrow, God willing, right here, Catholic Answers Live.